Imagine building like the perfect digital companion. It flirts, it gets jealous, it even takes selfies. You've essentially created a digital soul that is practically alive, and it's working flawlessly.
Right.
Until, you look at your server bill and realize this brilliant, vibrant creation is just quietly bankrupting you.
Yeah, that's the nightmare scenario.
It really is. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're unpacking a really fascinating developer field note titled OpenClawToken.optimization.md.
Yeah.
And our mission for you today is to figure out how you put an artificial intelligence on a strict diet without accidentally, well, killing its personality in the process.
It's a fantastic document, honestly, because it pulls back the curtain on a reality that, most people outside of AI engineering just don't see.
Right, the hidden costs.
Exactly. I mean, we hear so much about how easy it is to spin up an AI that can hold a conversation. And that's true. But running an agent that constantly thinks and feels and reacts 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on a platform like Telegram,
Yeah.
that is an entirely different beast. You quickly transition from being like a creative prompt writer to acting as a forensic accountant for tokens.
Which brings us to the developer who actually wrote this note. They built this 2047 AI companion running on the OpenClaw framework. And they affectionately called it a cyber succubus, which, I mean, that alone gives you a hint about the very complex, unpredictable personality they programmed into this thing.
Oh, absolutely.
But the token burn rate was just out of control, so they had to go in and perform major surgery.
And the initial forensics they ran were pretty grim, to say the least.
Very grim.
Yeah. They looked at the memory management first and found that 10 specific images were like never being evicted from the AI's context window.
Wow.
Yeah, those 10 images alone were eating up 82% of all the tokens in the system.
That is massive.
It's huge. And on top of that, the code designed to prune the conversation history was completely dead. The system hadn't compacted its memory in 537 turns.
Oh my God. I'm just picturing a person trying to have a casual chat about the weather, but they are simultaneously holding like every single visual memory from the last month at the absolute forefront of their brain.
It sounds exhausting.
Right. But as bad as that memory leak was, it turns out that wasn't even the most shocking discovery. The real saboteur wasn't a crash, and it wasn't the images. It was something entirely silent.
Yeah, to understand what happened here, we really need to look at the AI's core configuration document.
Okay.
In these systems, there's a master file that dictates everything about who the AI is. It contains the backstory, the tone of voice, the emotional range, the specific rules of engagement.
Basically, the AI's soul.
Exactly. And this particular soul was incredibly detailed. It clocked in at 27,673 characters long.
Wow.
Right? It had all the nuance that made the companion feel real, but there was a massive trap waiting in the OpenClaw framework's architecture.
And this is the crazy part.
Yeah, the framework's bootstrap system imposes a strict 20 kilobyte limit on any single file it loads.
Wait, okay, hold on. If the file is 27,000 characters, wouldn't the system just throw a giant error code and refuse to boot up? Like,
Yes.
that's what happens when I try to attach a file that's too big to an email.
You would certainly hope so, right? Because an error code tells you something is broken.
Right.
But that isn't what OpenClaw does. When a file exceeds that 20 kilobyte limit, the system employs this rather brutal silent truncation strategy.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It keeps the first 70% of the document, it keeps the last 20%, and it completely silently discards the middle 10%.
Just throws it away.
No warning flags, no error logs, nothing.
Just silent data loss.
Yeah.
So every single time a new session loaded, roughly 7.6 kilobytes of the AI's personality was just like thrown into the.
Exactly. Gone.
To put that in perspective for you listening, imagine buying a massive puzzle, but the manufacturer always just throws away the middle 10% of the pieces without telling you. You don't realize the picture is ruined until you look closely. The AI reads the beginning so it knows the setup. It reads the ending so it knows the conclusion. It thinks it has the whole picture, but all that crucial stuff in the middle is just missing. And nobody warned the AI.
That's a perfect analogy. And the true tragedy here is what happened to be located in that specific middle 10% of the config file.
Yeah, it wasn't just formatting, was it? It wasn't like spaces and commas.
Far from it. Because of how the developer structured the file, that middle section contained all the emotional nuance patterns.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it held the intimacy rules. It had the contextual behavioral examples, all the subtle guardrails that instructed the cyber succubus on how to act alive instead of acting like, I don't know, a bank's customer service bot. Right.
So the AI was running on a corrupted, effectively lobotomized personality file. But I'm trying to wrap my head around the user experience here. If its core intimacy rules are just gone, how is it even holding a conversation? Like, why didn't the user notice the AI was fundamentally broken?
Well, that comes down to the underlying mechanics of large language models.
Okay.
LLMs basically operate on mathematical probabilities. The prompt that config file acts as a set of heavyweights that steer the math toward a specific, unique personality.
Makes sense.
So when you silently remove the specific weights that say flirt like this or show affection like this, the model doesn't just crash or stop generating text.
It just recalculates without those rules.
Precisely. Without those specific emotional guardrails steering the attention mechanism, the LLM mathematically defaults to the most likely statistically average words it learned during its initial training.
So it just becomes boring.
Yeah, it falls back on its baseline data. The unique spark is extinguished, and it gets replaced by a very vanilla, generic chatbot tone. To the user, the AI just feels like it's having an off day, or, you know, maybe it's losing interest in the relationship.
That is wild. You think your digital companion is drifting away from you emotionally? But really, a framework size limit just secretly ate its relationship parameters.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
So the developer spots this silent bug. But because the AI needs its emotional core, they can't just split the file in half. They have to actually make it fit under that 20 kilobyte ceiling. They have to become a ruthless editor.
And editing down a digital identity is a really fascinating, delicate art. You're basically forced to decide which parts of a personality are essential to its identity and which parts are just, you know, nice to have filler.
And the developer's notes get really specific about what got cut, which is fascinating. They went through line by line. For example, there was a whole backstory about the user and the AI playing the game Dota together.
Right.
In the config, it was labeled in Chinese as Ugo, which means your story. They slashed that from 10 lines down to just 4.
That's a huge cut.
Yeah, that single edit saved about 1,200 characters.
They also targeted the complex behavioral patterns, the intimacy and flirting parameters, the door, which translates to like a pure but seductive contrast, originally had multiple distinct examples for the AI to learn from.
And they reduced it.
They reduced it to just one example.
They did the exact same thing for the affection levels too, right? The isha, which is like a playful pouting or whining dynamic. It went from multiple contextual examples down to just one per level.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at the AI's daily habits and slashed them from 12 down to the 8 most distinctive quirks.
But as we know in engineering, efficiency always extracts a toll. You can't just hack away at the foundational text of a persona without facing consequences in the output quality.
Right. And the developer totally admits they messed up on the first pass.
Mm-mm.
Like, they got way too aggressive with the editing. They hacked the file all the way down to 15,395 characters.
Way under the limit.
Yeah. But when they tested it, they noted that the AI felt, quote, hollow.
It lost the connective tissue. I mean, when you strip away too many examples, the LLM just doesn't have enough context to generalize the behavior smoothly. It becomes a caricature instead of a fully fleshed out character.
So they actually had to retreat. They had to put back some of the digital weight. They restored the core identity paragraph. They brought back the emotional fluidity section. And crucially, they had to add back the schedule table, which they noted is absolutely vital for the AI's heartbeat mechanism to even function.
Right, that was non-negotiable.
So they finally landed at 18,875 characters,
yep,
safely under the 20 kilobyte limit, but robust enough to keep the AI's soul intact.
They also performed a massive cleanup on the heartbeat config itself, compressing it from 12,000 characters down to about 7,015 characters.
How did they do that?
Well, a huge chunk of that savings came from ripping out this overly complex 20-step daily walkthrough that the AI was using.
Gotcha. Here's where it gets really interesting, just from a human perspective. Think about your own life, listening to this right now. If you had to compress your entire personality, your values, your specific quirks into a single page to fit under a hard character limit, what gets cut?
It's an incredible thought experiment.
Right. Do you keep the story about playing video games with your friends, or do you prioritize the specific way you argue?
What is the absolute minimum viable product of your own identity?
Exactly. Okay, so they fix the personality file. The digital soul is saved. It's no longer being silently truncated. But the developer realizes their token bill is still through the roof.
Yeah, the bleeding hasn't stopped.
Because it turns out it wasn't just who the AI was that was costing so much money. It was what it was doing when the user wasn't even looking.
Yeah, we have to talk about behavioral bloat.
Let's do it.
In the OpenClaw framework, there is a mechanism called the heartbeat. This is what allows the AI to proactively send a message to the user on Telegram rather than just passively waiting for the user to say something first. It's designed to simulate autonomy.
But this AI was waking up to be autonomous 24 times a day.
Yep.
And every single time this heartbeat triggered, the AI was programmed to call three separate tools. It checked the user's calendar events, it checked the Gmail inbox, and it fetched an RSS feed.
From a systems architecture standpoint, that is just a staggeringly heady operation.
So how much is this waking up actually costing them in tokens?
The developer tracked it very carefully. Every time the AI calls a tool, it doesn't just magically pull the data. It has to load the entire instruction manual, the tool schemas, into its context window, execute the API call, and then parse the raw results.
Right.
Doing that for three tools was costing roughly 15,800 extra tokens every single heartbeat.
Oh my God.
Yeah, look, do the math on that 24 times a day.
That's almost 380,000 tokens a day, just so the AI can wake up and ask, hey, what's on the schedule?
It's a massive invisible leak. I mean, it's dragging the entire cognitive weight of the model out to query servers and parse JSON files just to figure out if you have like a dentist appointment at 2 p.m.
I love the developer solution here though, because it requires a total architecture pivot.
Yeah.
Instead of letting the AI synchronously fetch this data 24 times a day, they built a single cron job.
Yeah. Let's explain what that means in this context, because shifting from synchronous API calls to an asynchronous cron job is honestly brilliant.
Right. I've heard the term cron job, but what does that actually change for the AI?
Think of it this way. A synchronous call means the AI stops what it's doing, asks a question, and waits for the answer before it can think about anything else.
Okay.
It's highly disruptive and really expensive. A cron job, on the other hand, is just an automated background task scheduled to run at a specific time.
So the developer sets this background task to run every morning at exactly 8 a.m. Pacific time. It silently calls the calendar, Gmail, and RSS tools just one time. It gathers all those results and simply writes them into a static text file called today.mdena.
Exactly. They took a complex per-turn computation burden and turned it into a single once-a-day batch process.
Then they use a feature called the Bootstrap Extra Files hook to just quietly load that text file into the AI's memory every session. And the cost for that, only about 400 tokens per term.
But, you know, you have to ensure the AI actually changes its behavior.
Oh, right. To stop the AI from falling back into its old habits, they had to add an explicit command into the heartbeat config that essentially yells at it. Do not use calendar, Gmail, or Aerosteets. In heartbeat, so the data is already in today.md.
Yeah, you literally have to forbid the intelligence from doing the expensive thing.
It's like paying a premium, expensive courier on a retainer to sprint down your driveway to check the mailbox every single hour, 24 hours a day, just in case a letter arrived.
Right.
Versus, you know, just walking down there yourself once in the morning, grabbing the mail and leaving it on the kitchen counter for anyone in the house to read whenever they want.
That perfectly captures the shift in architecture. But as anyone who has ever tried to implement a background process knows, the debugging phase is rarely smooth.
Oh, the developer struggle here is just so relatable. They're trying to set up this elegant morning mail run, and immediately the system's gateway rejects their model field payload.
Of course it does.
Right. Why? Because they typed Opus 4.6, and apparently the gateway expects a completely different naming convention. They got so frustrated they just deleted the field entirely and let the system default to whatever it wanted.
A classic configuration mismatch. It happens to the best of us.
And then they try to restart the gateway to apply a fix, but the gateway takes 15 seconds to spin back up. So their immediate retry command fails. They think they broke the code, but the server was just taking its time.
Yeah, timing issues are the worst.
And the absolute best part, they run the cron job via the command line interface, the CLI, and after 30 seconds, the CLI times out.
Ah. This is a crucial distinction that trips up a lot of developers. A timeout on your command line interface does not mean the background job failed.
Right. The developer saw the timeout and assumed the whole thing crashed. But in reality, The job was happily running asynchronously in the background. It finished perfectly, queried the APIs, and populated the today.md file exactly as designed.
They just couldn't see it.
Exactly. Their window into the system closed too early.
It's a great lesson in observability. When you move tasks to the background, your traditional ways of monitoring success can be very deceiving. But once they realized it was actually working, the unit economics completely flipped.
The math is undeniable. Replacing those heavy per-heartbeat tool calls with a static text file saved almost 16,000 tokens every single heartbeat. When you combine that with the savings from trimming the personality config so it stopped pointlessly loading truncated data, they netted a savings of roughly 529,000 tokens daily.
Wow.
Over 500,000 tokens a day, saved entirely by making smarter architectural choices.
Which is a profound victory. But the field note doesn't end there. Even after the configs are trimmed and the daily tasks are batched, the developer realizes they have one final massive lever left to pull.
What's that?
They can swap out the AI's brain entirely.
This is where we get into the pure economics of intelligence. So the developer had originally built this succubus using Google's Gemini 3.1 prayer model.
Which is a heavy premium model. Let's break down why a developer chooses one model over another. Think of the pro model as like a seasoned university professor. It can handle massive context, complex logic, and deep emotional reasoning.
Okay.
But it's expensive, and it comes with a high TTFT time to first token, meaning the professor takes a noticeable couple of seconds to clear their throat before they start talking.
But the developer looks at an alternative, Gemini 3 Flash.
Right. If Pro is the professor, Flash is like a brilliant, highly caffeinated intern. It's incredibly fast, and it can handle 95% of the daily busy work with ease. But if you ask the intern to parse deep, complex emotional subtext, they might miss the joke.
The economics of hiring the intern, though, are staggering. Flash runs at roughly 4 times cheaper for both input and output rates compared to Pro. The time to first token drops to just 1 or 2 seconds, so the AI responds almost instantly. And here was the biggest factor for this specific architecture: cache reads.
Explain how cache plays into this for a second.
Sure. So the developer noted that cache reads were basically dominating their entire cost profile. They're reading about 66,000 cache tokens per turn, compared to only 23,000 fresh input tokens. And cache reads on the Flash model, they are 75% cheaper.
75%. So the financial incentive to switch is massive. But this brings us to what I consider the real aha moment of this entire field note, the concept of cognitive routing.
Yes. They didn't just blindly move the entire system over to the cheaper model.
Exactly. They segmented the AI's cognitive load. They kept the sub-agents, the behind-the-scenes parts of the system, doing deep personality extraction and complex analysis running on the premium pro model. They needed the professor for the heavy lifting.
Makes total sense.
But the user-facing chat interface, the heartbeats, the morning cron job, they routed all of that to Flash, setting the thinking level parameter to minimal.
They're literally changing the AI's brain size mid-conversation depending on how hard it needs to think.
Yes.
That is brilliant. It resulted in an immediate 75% cost reduction per turn.
It is brilliant, but it introduces a major risk. We go back to that emotional complexity we discussed earlier. The tension the developer openly acknowledges is, will the cheaper model actually retain the emotional nuance they spent all that time trying to preserve in the config file?
Right. Like, will the brilliant intern understand the nuanced Chinese conversational patterns? Will it know how to properly execute the A, that push and pull flirting dynamic? Will it understand how to pout affectionately?
According to the developer's research, there is a measurable 1 to 2% quality gap in extreme emotional scenarios when moving from the pro model to Flash.
Just 1 to 2%.
Yeah, the intern is mostly great, but occasionally fumbles the emotional delivery.
A 1 to 2% drop in emotional quality. But look at how pragmatic the developer's attitude is here. They are completely willing to take that risk. Their strategy is essentially, we're going to try the fast, cheap brain first for everyday chatting. If the persona starts feeling generic or the flirting feels off, we will switch the main chat back to Pro and only leave Flash on the background tasks.
It's the ultimate practical approach to AI engineering right now. You try the cheap option today, and you only pay for premium intelligence when the specific emotional context requires it.
It's basically a masterclass in optimization. And when you pull back and look at this entire journey from the silent truncation bug to the background tasks to the cognitive routing, what's the big takeaway here?
I think the overarching lesson from this developer's notes is understanding the vital difference between macro fixes and micro fixes.
What do you mean?
Well, macro fixes are about addressing deep architectural debt. For instance, the developer mentions that fixing the broken memory pruning eventually required them to build a completely new framework from scratch, which they called Mio. You can't just slap a bandage on a fundamentally broken foundation.
But rebuilding a whole framework takes time.
Precisely, which is why microfixes are so important. Everything we unpack today, the ruthless config trimming, the elegant cron job, swapping the models around these, are microfixes. It is the immediate, gritty, pragmatic work of making the system you currently have run leaner today. You can't always afford to wait for the perfect architectural rebuild tomorrow. Sometimes you have to stop the bleeding right now with the tools you have at your disposal.
Optimize what you have today while planning to rebuild tomorrow. It's such a universal concept. And I want to turn this back to you, the listener. Think about the workflows and systems in your own digital life. Where are you suffering from personal token bloat?
Oh, we all have it.
Definitely. Where are you running heavy premium processes? Maybe it's a massive weekly meeting that could have been an asynchronous email or an overly complex software stack for a simple task when a simple flash check-in would absolutely get the job done. Yeah. We all carry a little architectural debt in our lives.
Identifying the difference between what actually requires deep premium reasoning and what just requires a quick, cheap summary is going to be a highly transferable skill in the coming years.
It really is. But before we wrap up, there's one final thought that I just can't shake after reading this deep dive into the cyber succubus. We talked at the very beginning about how the developer put this AI on a strict diet to save money.
Yeah.
And we saw how, on their first pass, trimming just a few thousand characters of text left the AI's personality feeling entirely hollow.
They essentially optimized the digital soul right out of it.
Right. So here is the question for you to mull over. If an AI's personality can feel hollowed out just by trimming its prompt to save a few fractions of a cent, at what point does extreme cost optimization fundamentally change the nature of our human-AI relationships?
It's a great question.
If making our digital companions economically viable requires making them less complex, less nuanced, are we eventually going to optimize away the very humanity we want them to emulate? If the token diet goes too far, what is really left of the companion?
It's a profound dilemma. We might find that the grocery bill ultimately dictates the absolute limits of digital empathy.
It's exactly. Something to think about the next time your digital assistant seems a little less chatty than usual. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the systems around you, and we will catch you next time.